Hi, my name is Ben Armstrong.
Hi, this is David Koch.
My name is Thomas Maurer.
Hi, I'm Donna Sarkar.
Hi, my name is Lana Montgomery.
Hi, I'm Seth Warres.
Hi, I'm Aaron Thomas.
I'm Jess Dodson.
Hi, I'm Rocky Heckman.
Hi, I'm Sonia Cuff.
Hi, I'm Troy Hunt.
Hello, this is Wally Mead.
My name is Reid Purvis.
Hi, I'm Lars Klink.
Hi, my name is Alan Birchall.
Hi, I'm Adam Fowler.
Hi, I'm Scott Guthrie, and you're listening to the Need to Know podcast.
All the latest Microsoft Cloud news, as well as industry guest deep dive conversations. It's a Need to Know podcast. All thanks to the CIA Ops patron community. The Need to Know podcast. Catch us on Twitter and Facebook, N2K Podcast, and online at ciaops.podbean.com.
Welcome to the Need to Know podcast. My name is Robert Crane and you join me for episode 277. I thought I'd blast this one out before we experience Microsoft Ignite. We expect lots and lots of information and stories from there. I'll bring you those as soon as the event is done, but let's get some of these stories out of the way. Now, firstly, if you do write code or you use it to do things like PowerShell, which I do, it's great to know that Visual Studio Code, which is the lightweight editor, is now available directly on the web. So if you go to vscode.dev, I'll put the link in the show notes so you can go and have a look at it, but it basically is the full version of VS Code as a web page. You can link it to repositories on GitHub, so really, really handy if you're out there writing code, and also really good to work with even some documents around links and so on. Now, if you are using that, go and have a look at vscode.dev. Now, another thing that I'll call out that has updated recently has been the new whiteboard that's appeared on my Windows devices. So if you haven't seen, Whiteboard has had a complete refresh. It's added a lot of new features, functionality. Interestingly, there are some things that I haven't yet as found in the environment that seem not to be there anymore. So one of the things is that I can't seem to find is the ability to clear the whole canvas as well as export to an SVG. So some things have been taken away, it would seem, but generally very positive. The product includes things like automatic arrow creation on lines, shapes and so on. So very, very handy. Lots of new features, plenty of templates for you to get involved with. So if you haven't looked at Microsoft Whiteboard, I recommend that you go and do that because it is a really handy collaboration tool, especially in these times of remote work. Now, one of the biggest stories recently has been the fact that Microsoft has overtaken Apple as the world's most valuable company. Now, this has been the situation of Apple and Microsoft trading that tag for a little while now, but obviously with component shortages and so on, Apple is beginning to fall away a little bit and Microsoft is powering on with its cloud products. Now, I'll put a link in the show notes to that article, plus this other interesting one I found talking about Microsoft's growth in the quarter. So again, 22% overall, but it's got a really nice little table in here that breaks down the Microsoft areas. So for example, you know, things like Azure, Office 365, Windows and so on. It gives you the percentage quarter on quarter improvement. For example, you know, we're looking at something like 50% for Azure. We're looking at, you know, 23% for Office 365 commercial, you know, server products and so on, and cloud services are 35%. But it's just amazing to see the continued percentage growth. You know, Azure, for example, is basically still running hot at 50% quarter on quarter growth. I think Microsoft topped, you know, $45 billion of revenue in the quarter. It's just amazing the amount of money that these companies are generating. And it's not just Microsoft, obviously people like Google and Facebook, now Meta, and also even Apple are also generating stellar revenues here as well as profits. So again, some interesting articles to go in there and have a look at the breakdown of Microsoft's revenue and how well it is actually performing in the market. Now, aside from that, there is also some updates to Microsoft Teams. Again, the link will be in the show notes. As mentioned, Whiteboard integration with Teams has also improved. The ability to do full transcripts, if you haven't seen that in your Teams meeting, has basically appeared. We've got the ability to have breakout room pre-meeting creation and assignment, so we can assign people to breakout rooms inside Teams. We've also got enhancements to PowerPoint Live, so you can do sort of reporter style or weather person style, you know, in front of the slide there. Some new devices as well, so lots of enhancements with Teams. We expect more to come through from Ignite in the next couple of days. Now, if you weren't aware, Microsoft Defender for Endpoint also includes web content filtering as part of that. That has now gone generally available. Microsoft initially partnered with a team with another business to do that. Then they took over that responsibility totally, integrated into Defender for Endpoint, and now they've reached GA with that product. So I'll put the link to the article in the notes so you can go and have a look. Another one of the many benefits that are built in natively to Defender for Endpoint. Now, another interesting one that Microsoft rolled out to Endpoint Manager is the ability to manage all your Surface devices. Now, what you'll find is if you go into the Endpoint Manager console, so endpoint.microsoft.com, select the option to view all the options on the left from the menu on the left, and you'll find an option there that allows you to manage or view report on your Surface devices. Extremely powerful, I think, if you have a fleet of Surface devices, which I certainly do personally. But again, let's look at and think about where the ball is going here. So imagine the day, probably in the not too distant future, when people like HP, Lenovo, Dell will be integrating their own portals potentially into this as well. So the idea with these portals is you can manage the devices, you can look at their warranty, you can launch warranty incidents there and arrange all of that basically in that portal without having to go to a third party. So again, Microsoft is doing it for Surface, setting the benchmark here. It wouldn't surprise me to see the other hardware OEMs also start integrating with this down the track to provide this total integration as well. Now, another enhancement has come to the Microsoft Authenticator. We've also got the ability to autofill your address and payment information in there. So if you do want to have a secure location where you can keep all that information, you can use the Microsoft Authenticator now to do that. It's really handy to have that nice secure place to have those details, and rather than having to type them in every time, to have them autofill when you're using. So nice and easy. Now, on the security side, Microsoft has a great blog post here, which I encourage everybody to read, talking about Nobelium and its targeting the delegated admin privileges. So the idea here is that if you are a reseller or have someone looking after your IT, they may have the rights to do work as an administrator inside your environment. And that would mean that there is a potential threat there, because if that party gets compromised, that compromise could lead a compromise to your own environment as well. So obviously the attackers are going after the Aladdin's cave of credentials, and they're going to target resellers and people who support many technology companies and then utilize that to be able to get in and perform nefarious acts there. So great article from Microsoft here talking about the risks and what steps you can take to minimize this, what needs to be done, and how to keep on top of this, because this is going to be a growing trend. So there's information there around setting up MFA, using Azure Sentinel, cloud app security, and so on, that I recommend that you go in and have a look at to help protect yourself from these sort of attacks. Now, the other interesting one that I've just found that I'll bring your attention to is a notification on the Microsoft roadmap here. Now, what Microsoft are saying is they're going to basically start rolling out a built-in protection for Microsoft Defender for Office 365. So rolling out in December, and I'll quote here, it says, "We're introducing built-in protection for Defender for Office 365 to automatically elevate all users within your organization to the base level of security protection." So in essence, what this is going to do by the look of it is going to provide, automatic policies for safe attachments and safe links. And the aim there is to remove the burden on admins, requiring no admin action to be turned on. They'll be on by default for new and existing customers. So if you're using Defender for Office 365, I would suggest that probably come December, you'll see new policies automatically appear in your environment. So you might want to keep an eye on those and make sure they don't clash with anything and that you understand what they do. But effectively, we have best practices for Exchange Online Filtering, and they can also be applied automatically. And Microsoft's going to do the same thing for anybody who's got Defender for Office 365, because unfortunately, a lot of people do buy the product and don't realize they need to actually create policies to turn these sort of things on. So Microsoft is going to turn those on automatically for you. So that's probably the most relevant stories I've got for you for this episode. Remember, like I said, Ignite kicks off tomorrow, and we'll keep you up to date with all the news and the information as it comes down the pipe. You can contact me via the Twitters at DirectorCIA. You can also send me an email, director@ciaops.com, providing any feedback. Let me know who you'd like or what topics you'd like to hear discuss on the podcast. Also welcome, you know, any feedback that you may have on how I can continue to improve these for people. And if you're just enjoying it, also drop me a line. Love to hear from people who are getting value out of what I've created here. So with all that, why don't we get into the interview for this episode? Welcome along to our interview for the Need to Know podcast. I'm joined by Des Russell. Welcome, Des.
Hey, Rob. Thanks very much for having me on your podcast.
Excellent. And as always, what we'll do is we'll get Des to give us a bit of background on himself and what he's currently doing.
Thanks, Rob. I really appreciate it. So a bit of background about me. I spent 7 years in the Microsoft partner channel business, helping SMB partners and our mid-market partners essentially grow and scale their businesses with Microsoft. My background with the Microsoft channel spans across probably 20-odd years. When I came to Australia back in 2003, I actually started a Microsoft consultancy business. So the opportunity to then work with partners at Microsoft, bringing my experience and my I lost a lot of hair, and yes, I am bald, bringing my experience and a lot of what I'd learned in running my own business and the challenges that every single partner typically has around kind of trying to get ahead and stay ahead kind of led me to where I am today, and that is with Partner Elevate, and leaving Microsoft after 7 years to establish a business, Partner Elevate, that is 100% focused on growing and scaling technology businesses, particularly in the Microsoft ecosystem.
All right, so probably a good place to kick off our discussion is a bit of a retrospective now. We probably had some interactions before this on LinkedIn, based on the previous podcast I did with George from Ingram. You were obviously uniquely placed at that sort of similar time period to see the introduction or the maturing of BPOS into Office 365, and then partners beginning to, you know, take it on board, and some of the challenges that were around that sort of time frame. So based on your time at Microsoft, and especially on the Office 365 and, you know, being close with the partners and that being a major focus for you, give us a bit of a, you know, retrospective view of what you saw that progress or your thoughts during that time as you saw the market move in sort of this direction to be more and more cloud focused.
Yeah, well, it's an interesting point because it kind of comes to this where we are today, where we tend to see, traditionally, if we look at the Microsoft channel and we look at where a lot of the capability was focused, it was really focused on that productivity stack. I mean, let's go back to the first productivity in a box, SBS, which I know you're very, very familiar with, really. We started... If you kind of look at where partners came from, there was a tremendous amount of skill and capability that partners built up in the traditional way in which, let's look at it, way IT was delivered. And when you think about the move to BPOS and then the move to the cloud, undoubtedly, it wasn't necessarily the technology shift that got partners to rethink try and establish ways in which they can monetize the opportunity. It was really the business model challenge that really where you saw some partners absolutely making a tremendous a leap in their business model, moving from break-fix type services to more cloud-based services and annuity revenue. But you saw a tremendous amount of the traditional partners really being left behind. I kind of bring it down into two things. One is absolutely understanding what that business model change actually meant for their business, moving from a traditional break fix or project based business to an annuity based business where your invoices and your projects are really smaller, but you're not thinking about that from a project cost perspective or a revenue perspective, but you're talking about things like customer lifetime value. You know, when we think about our channel is made up of technologists that are really good, really had skills and capability around this technical capability, and really trying to think about business model change, annuity revenue, cost, profits, how to do customer acquisition differently. It really left a lot of them in a space which is where we find the channel today, where you've got a massive amount of businesses that are really stuck in trying to build consistent revenue flows with a business model that Office 365 is kind of, the technology has kind of forced them to be there.
So an interesting observation I've had is that, as you mentioned, back in the day with the on-prem and that sort of model, resellers typically were selling capital items. So they would do a project and they would quote a server, and that would be big bucks, 30, 40, 50, 100,000. I mean, we had done back in the day, $100,000, $200,000 worth of hardware and implementation. But that's a once off. And obviously to survive, during the periods in between, you would need sort of to go out and get more sales, which may mean obviously leaving, some of the customers with less than adequate service. Now, the trend then was to move to that MSP style model where you're charging a maintenance fee in the middle to try and sort of make that up as well. Now, the interesting thing to me is that there was this big push to move to the MSP model and per month billing. And then all of a sudden, the technology has moved to providing the similar same sort of capability. But as you say, a lot of people sort of didn't seem to make that mindset. They were very hooked on this, one big hit at one time, this big amount of money and all the hassle that sort of went with it, rather than that recurring revenue that you talk about. So, from your point of view, is why do you think there has been this challenge in the mindset to change? Is it just because I don't want to change, or it's because I don't have the skills, or what do you feel is the real reason here that's sort of holding these people back?
Look, there's a few reasons, but let me try and kind of put this into perspective that business model change is not something that you do overnight, and business model change impacts absolutely everything in your business. And as I think the approach taken by vendors to get their channel to start to think about cloud-based service annuity models, moving to an MSP type model where there was a element of, you've got to kind of take the fall of, I'm not going to get revenue at the same rate that I was, but I'm going to get more revenue over time. Now, it's easy for a vendor that's making billions and millions and trillions of dollars, all vendors, to make that particular statement. But when you fundamentally look at the channel, there was a lot of businesses that just could not make their change without blowing up their business. And really what it comes down to the fundamental aspects that I think is missing from a lot of the enablement programs that are going out to actually, and partners have access to actually go and make a sustainable change to their business model that allows them to grow at a pace that they can still keep their business going. And I'll point to a very specific example to try illustrate this. If we think about the enablement programs that are delivered to channel today or through channel today by vendors, by distributors, these enablement programs are really, they're really fiscal enablement program based. They're fiscal based. And what I mean by that is that these programs are really designed to make certain shifts in the channel market in that particular fiscal year. Because vendors, distributors, etc., they are all running to a fiscal year, a fiscal calibration of where they see market opportunity that's driven by the opportunity of their products and where they're looking to grow market share or reduce competitiveness or improve competitiveness in a particular area where they're losing market share. The programs of enablement really drive towards that outcome for the vendor. But now, what is the outcome that we need to drive for an actual reseller? And while it might create a opportunity today, in the future, where we don't have a fundamental change in the way resellers approach things like lead generation, customer retention, customer management, we seem to see the same thing happening in the channel, where we get these blips of improvement in terms of partner capability, but it's not sustainable. And we kind of cycle, I call this, I wrote about it in an interview with CRN, and this is what I call channel inertia. That there seems to be this inertia that we see consistently across the entire channel, where we have vendors doing what they think is right to move the channel forward in terms of enablement programs, incentives, etc. And then we see resellers or partners in the channel looking to kind of dip in and make use of what's available to move their move their business forward. And it's kind of like this inertia of vendors put capability and opportunity and enablement programs out there for the channel. And then we've got these channel businesses trying to make sense of, well, what should I do? What should I tag onto that's going to help my business? But in reality, they just don't have the core capability to be able to make use of those channels. So let's think about things like go-to-market. Let's think around all the investments in go-to-market and the millions of dollars that are all focused around go-to-market. While the intention is right from vendors and that to drive go-to-market in the channel, when you think about a partner's capability or business's capability to take advantage of those go-to-market investments and go-to-market programs, depending on how this reseller's business is performing in terms of how they approach sales and marketing, do they have a core message or core offer that they take to customers? Can they manage a lead flow pipeline? Can they nurture customers from cold to cold prospect to winning winning a customer? It's really dependent on their capability, whether that investment actually works. And we consistently see resellers naturally or business partners naturally putting their hand up to take advantage of what's on offer, only to be found out that 2-3 months into a particular go-to-market program that they actually aren't delivering a sustainable growth in their business.
So would it be fair to say perhaps that the way that this has been approached with these campaigns you're talking about, that they've been targeted at a very wide spectrum of partners, from, you know, the one person operation to the larger multi-person operation, and they're trying to fit a requirement, a KPI from their side, as you mentioned, into this to use it as an attractive measure to get as many people on board, you know, rather than it being, you know, more targeted, as you mentioned. So is it, you know, really targeted as a broad spray? Is that part of the issue, do you believe?
Look, Being in the vendor space, you've got to think about things. You know, you're dealing with the channel. You're dealing with thousands and thousands of businesses that are all at different stages. And really, the only way to understand where each business is at is to have a partner program that is probably way too expensive to run and manage. So you've kind of got to make bets based on what you see happening in the market. So I absolutely understand from a vendor point of view the challenge that they're trying to deal with. The way I would approach this is that it's not about picking certain businesses. It's about placing programs at the right time for businesses to take advantage of. And what I mean by that is that we get these programs that are so quarterly based, like as an example, practice build programs that are going out now from the vendors, in particular Microsoft. Fiscal, but it's quarterly based. So this quarter, we are looking to build X amount of partners in a particular security practice or data and AI practice or whatever you, whatever it may be. What happens after the quarter? What's the next step that a partner gets taken on to be able to now utilize the investment that they've made in time, energy, and resource in that particular quarter? And what if they're not ready to put their hand up right now to join that program? 6 months later, we've moved from security practice and now we're in, let's call it Viva practices. So now the offer in market is we're building Viva practices. Now a partner who's not going down that route, what's happening to them? They're being left behind. So I feel that when we approach the go-to-market, when we approach partner enablement, we need to be thinking about this in a real long-term perspective. And the long-term perspective is that we need to have programs that are structured in a way that when a partner is ready, they can look into what it is they can take advantage of, as opposed to being driven by what's on the table now. Because one thing that causes is that causes distraction. Now, you're a business owner, Rob, and to everyone listening, one of the things every business owner and every business needs to deal with is a constant focus and refocusing. Now, when vendors put offers in the market, One of the challenges for resellers is, well, should I jump on that now or should I wait? And if I jump on it now, am I going to get an advantage? Or if I miss it, am I not going to be asked again to jump on this particular program? So I call it the shiny green light. If you think about cats, put a light and the cat will follow that, no problem. I think partners kind of chase the shiny green light, and it's not a bad thing, but it's about being able to determine whether the light that they're chasing is the right light that they need in their business right now, as opposed to, you know, the light that's been shone by a vendor, which is based on what their priorities are.
So I think, would it be also fair to consider that many business owners, especially in the SMB space, have a deep technology background. They've been a self-starter, they've solved problems, they've given good customer service, and then they've taken this into, you know, a business that they've formed. But their technology skills may have progressed as the technology has improved and changed. But perhaps would it be fair to say that they don't have, you know, the same level of business skill or business training and ongoing development that has allowed them to keep up with the, you know, the changes in the industry. So they have perhaps a good understanding of, you know, accounts and cash flow and that sort of very basic skill set you need to start a business. But when it comes to maybe the next level up, the marketing, the strategy, the tactics, the direction, the focus, as you're talking about, is this a skill set that is perhaps lacking and needs to be better developed for these people to be able to take advantage of these sort of things that you're talking about?
Look, absolutely. And it's a skill set that not every business has, because as you said, there might be smaller businesses that just can't afford to invest into building particular skills around sales and marketing, as an example. But I think the number one skill set that I don't see consistently missing is not understanding financials. It's not understanding, because I think SMB businesses are quite good at that. It's not understanding profit and loss. It's actually understanding what it takes to build a sustainable growth-focused business that is where sales and marketing is a front and center investment, as opposed to building up new skills and capability outside of what they do, what they actually do today. And we call this in our ebook. I've got an ebook that's up on our, you can get it on our website, or people can just respond afterwards, and I'll gladly send them a link to it. We talk about the performance curve of businesses, or the performance curve of our channel. And when we think about the performance curve of our channel, I feel that there is a, if we have to take, if you have to, if you have to think about a pyramid, a lovely triangle, I would say that a lot of our channel is really, really businesses that are trying to think about what it is they need to do to be seen as this go-to solution partner, be seen as a prioritized business, both from a Microsoft and a customer perspective. But fundamentally, throwing a digital campaign out there or throwing a marketing activity out there without some fundamental capability that's built in the actual business is really just a lot of, you know, it's about creating a lot of noise that doesn't really relate to actual revenue in the business. And I hear this so often when we're speaking to our clients, and that is, I'm just not getting the leads that I need in my business. And the reality is that they're not getting leads from Microsoft or through referrals, then where do they get leads from? And what it makes them feel like sales and marketing is left all up to them. And as you've just pointed out, that sales and marketing capability and skill set is missing from a lot of businesses. So we tend to go into this, I've tried sales and marketing, it didn't work. Why didn't it work? Were we, was this something we were just trying to put out I need clients this month? And the reality is, if you need clients this month, you should have been building those clients in your funnel 2 months ago. And that is a discrepancy that we see in any program that's offered to partners when it comes to those go-to-market benefits that partners are trying to utilize.
So I think it's an interesting dichotomy here, because many of the business I've been involved with and worked inside of, there is this natural friction between the technical side, which is largely the dominant player, and also the sales and marketing, which is the rainmaker. That's where the leads, that's where the opportunities come from. And there really hasn't been this melding and sort of working as a partnership. It's always been us against them, sales and marketing versus the technical people. They are generally very two different personality types, you know, as you mentioned. And I think that there's a frustration that is evidenced by both sides in the interaction between them. So I think that, like you say, is that the majority of people are technical people. They may not have this experience, and they run those, you know, one-off campaigns and it doesn't work, or they invest a lot of time and effort, doesn't get the result, they get frustrated with it, it doesn't work, it's not a registry setting that changes and I reboot and everything's good, because it is a longer term investment. Is that perhaps part of the core here too, that we overlook the technical skill set we've built up over the years and our ability to have a feel for technical problems and how we can solve them? Do we need the same sort of feel and invest that in the sales and marketing, do you believe?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think the fundamental challenge is that we have businesses that have this strong technical capability. I mean, let's just think about it. You know, if there's one, if there's two words or a phrase that's really relevant to the Microsoft channel, tech intensity is absolutely relevant to everyone. And that's kind of where the channel was born from. That's, you know, this technical background. But herein lies the challenge. And the challenge is as a business, I've got all this technical skills and capability, but how do I turn it into profitable business return? So when businesses view this technical capability around acquiring new skills, certifications, there is a challenge to turn that into something that is profitable business capability. And it's the application of the skill set to the market that they serve where a lot of businesses fail to capitalize on. And it's not a marketing problem. It's absolutely not only a marketing problem, let me put it that way. It's actually an ability to understand that the skills that I build in my business have to be relatable to a customer and a market that needs those skills and capability. And in order to relate it to that particular market, I need to understand really clearly what does that market need? And that requires businesses, unfortunately, to think really differently about what it is that ideal customer actually needs in the market. And it's not they don't need Azure skills. They need something that's going to help solve a problem that they would identify as their priority right now. And when you can't, as a business, when you can't match the skills and capability that you have to the customer need, you kind of float around trying to address anything that a customer would actually throw at you in terms of a complex problem or solution, instead of being so super clear that a customer can put me in a box. I'm quite comfortable to be put in a box that there's this one customer need that I can fulfill or I can help them with. And that is an alignment between the skills that I have and the market opportunity as well. So you don't have to have a marketing person to think like a marketer. You don't have to have marketing skills to execute marketing. What you actually need is you need a proven process and a way to think about this in a way that can be implemented in your business. And that's one of the key reasons why we created and I created the Partner Elevate business.
So again, can you share with us, perhaps we've talked about the challenges around this and maybe the change in skill set or the change in focus that partners, you know, need to make. We know that generally the channel perhaps is not going to change as readily as a partner can change. So if a partner does want to, you know, take this on board and begin a journey themselves and do an assessment or whatever, what would you recommend they should do first? What's the first step in this process of realigning and better understanding this, do you believe?
Yeah, sure. So we talk about alignment. Alignment is really there's three points to alignment. When you're looking to align your skills and capability to the market, for everyone who's going to be listening to this podcast, what I do is grab a pen and paper, grab the napkin that's next to you, and just create a triangle. So just draw yourself a triangle. At the top of the triangle, I want you to write customer. At the bottom left of the triangle, I want you to write opportunity. And on the far right of the triangle, I want you to write market. And alignment that you're trying to create in your particular market is really consistent of these three things: customer, the opportunity, and the market. And usually we see that when partners are trying to go to market or trying to make an impact in a market, they usually are deficient in one or more of these particular areas. And I'll show you what I mean. If I want to align my skills and capability to my customer, then if I'm only thinking about this particular customer, really, what am I thinking about in terms of the skills that align to the particular opportunity? So is the customer an opportunity? Do my skills actually align to it? Then I might think about, do my skills align to the opportunity and the market? So if I've got a customer and I can identify the opportunity, then really the market that I serve, is there an opportunity in this market? And when you look at things this particular way, in this, I might call it the, I'll give it a name now, let's call it the alignment trifecta. When you look at it this way, and you look at consistently, do I have the skills that are relevant to my customer? Do I have the skills that allow me to execute or deliver on an opportunity? And do I have the skills that allow me to occupy a space in a particular market? That can be a really quick way to identify whether your skill set is relevant or not. So if your skill set is not relevant, then what are your options? Your options are, if my skill set's not relevant, I've got to think about what skills do I need. And what's going to come right up there is not looking at the list of certs that are now available. It's going to go straight to what does my customer actually need, the customers that I actually serve. If my skill set isn't aligned to the opportunity, then I've got to think about, well, how do I address an opportunity that I might have in my customers for, let's call it, let's go security, endpoint security. What I need to do, do I need to invest in their skill set? And what's that going to take? Or do I need to look at how I can bring that skill set into my business through a partnership or actually, it's not an area, an opportunity that I need to invest in. And then in the market is absolutely critical. And we don't see enough of our partners aligning their skill set to the market. They do it once because that's the skill set that they have, but they don't do it consistently. So if my skill set is not relevant for my market, then I've either got to get skills that are relevant for my market, or I've got to go and apply my skills to another market. So when partners look at it from a customer opportunity and a market perspective, you really do get a really clear sense of what am I aligning to, and then what is the next step that I need to make. And we do this in our lead flow program. We help partners build a lead flow pipeline in the first 90 days. So where partners really focus on the goal of this particular 90-day activity is that partners build a lead flow pipeline that allows them to put a sales offer in market that delivers 30 leads and 10 opportunities in a 90-day period. And the alignment piece is kind of the core piece around the particular strategy.
All right. So if we look at, if you look at your experience and what you see out there in the market broadly, are you seeing generally, you know, where do the majority lie here? Are they lying firstly in the fact they're blissfully unaware, you know, something's wrong, but I'm continuing on and, you know, grinding it out and perhaps, you know, struggling, but not really aware of, you know, what needs to happen? Or is it more, for example, the second group, which sort of says, look, yeah, look, I know there's something wrong. I'm searching for a solution. I just can't put my finger on it. I haven't got a framework, as you mentioned. I need help from somebody outside my business and my skill set. You know, where do we fall here? Are most partners blissfully unaware, or do you see them as actively searching for a solution to what we've talked about?
I would definitely say then they're not unaware. I think our partners are very aware of what's going on, and that was one of the points that I made in my response on your last LinkedIn post. And that is that fundamentally, businesses are not making profit. So we think that with revenue becomes flows profits. Unfortunately, that's not the case. And in our assessments of working with 90 odd partners across in the last 12 months across APAC, Australia, New Zealand, Malaysia, and Singapore, there's fundamentally a lot of partners that are not making money. So when they are not making money, they are ultimately aware that they've got a challenge around their revenue flow that's in their business. It's actually quite, if I had to sort of put it into words, it's probably more up and down than it is. It's more up and down and more down than it is actually up in terms of their consistent revenue flow. So they definitely are aware, but what they actually need is to partners need to stop having knee-jerk reaction to building sales leads and pipeline and look at it with a consistent way in which they would bring some consistency of a lead flow into their business. You've got to stop going after marketing activities that are knee-jerk marketing activities. Unless you have a consistent marketing strategy and you have a consistent way to enable that marketing strategy, your investment today is not going to yield the investment that you need. And really, where do partners actually get stuck? It's not in, do I need more leads? It's not in really a strategy to find more leads. It's not really in the strategy to go and differentiate. They're trying to differentiate. They do all these good things, but they fail to implement their go-to-market activity. So they go and do these practice ball programs and these go-to-market activities, but they don't actually implement it. And when I say they don't implement it, they're not doing three key things. They're not attracting customers, they're not nurturing customers, and they're not converting customers. So they tend to feel like, well, marketing, sales and marketing just doesn't work because I went and spent $4,000 or $50,000 or $100,000 with an agency to go and build a go-to-market campaign for me. Our messaging is clear. We've got this beautiful offer, but I measure it by sales and I don't have any sales. And the reality is that internally, their business is just not designed or put together in the right way to actually attract, nurture, and convert those opportunities. And this is where these go-to-market programs undoubtedly fail because they focus on teaching a lot of the why and the what. Why partners should do it, what they should do around their messaging, what they should do around their positioning in the market, but they fail on the how. And it's really the how, if we think about how do you implement it, we are dealing with technical teams that don't have sales and technical leadership teams that don't have a good sales and marketing background or people in there. So if I've got the what and the why, then how do I make it a how? And the how is the implementation in their business. And when I think about my whole entire strategy around creating the Partner Elevate business was really just to focus on the how. There's a lot of businesses out there that have spent money, thousands of dollars on what and why, what they should be doing around marketing, why they should be doing it, but it's really the implementation of. So when we think about all of our programs that we offer to our investable partner customers, it's not just training, it's implementation. And the implementation is not something that's going to be done overnight. Partners need to have consistent help around how they can actually implement this in their business.
So the categorization I would give it based on what you've shared there is this concept or this syndrome, as I call it, of close the ticket. A lot of businesses in the technology space are so focused on their tools to close the ticket, close the job. That's their view on moving towards profitability. So they close the ticket as quickly as they can. They then move on to a completely different item, task switching, as you indicate, which is a completely different focus. Now, I think everybody out there would probably have a experience generally on the poorer side of dealing with organizations who are very ticket focused and very, you know, wanting to close the ticket, because their KPIs from that organisation are about, you know, closing the ticket so I look better, irrespective necessarily of the result. And there have been many cases where you've, you know, have to reopen tickets, and it's very, very frustrating. So I think you're, you know, there's a very valid point here, and I think that's one of the challenges with many businesses, is they've been very focused on providing quick results and getting the best in the shortest possible time for the customer. But I think the world and technology is changing to more of what you're talking about, where it's this long-term engagement, it's this ongoing training, it's how do we make, as a customer, the best use of these tools, and we want a vision, and how do we look at integrating AI, maybe not today. We're not just really after someone to do the mechanic side of it and change the engine or change the oil. We really need an understanding, and that sort of, I think, where part of, you know, the concept of what you're talking about with the marketing and presenting the business to customers is probably falling down there. So, I mean, is that a sort of a fair assessment in your experience, that maybe people are just too focused on, you know, the short-term gain, as you've been mentioning, close the ticket, get the job done, and, okay, what's next? What's the next burning fire I need to go and run around and put out?
Yeah, they are. And why they're focused on, because that brings in revenue. They know that that brings in revenue, and that brings in brings in revenue, but it also helps with customer retention. And you know, it's the customer retention. So how do you get out of that? How do you break the cycle? You break the cycle by being deliberate about what you want to do in your business in order to grow and scale it. And you put a deliberate action plan behind doing that. The shortest action plan that you can do, which is really going to deliver results, is fix your lead flow problem. Create a lead flow in your business that is consistent with your customer market that you serve, the skills that you have, and that allows you to then build a runway that allows you to think about customer acquisition, new customers, new skill sets, or new opportunities. So I definitely feel that it's a keeping the lights on mentality that is drowning a lot of our partners from being able to step out of or step into the limelight. I use this phrase with our customers, where we talk about moving from dependency to being differentiated and well-run businesses. Dependency businesses, where you are dependent on the handouts or third parties providing you leads or providing you investments, is not a good place to be in. But where you want to be is, you want to be in a, who doesn't want a differentiated business that is well-run?
All right. So as we move towards the end of our session here, and again, thank you very much for all that information that you have shared, what can you perhaps summarize all this in and boil it down for the listeners? And then if you can also perhaps share some contact details where people can reach out to you to continue the conversation around, you know, what you're offering and your thoughts on this subject.
Yeah, sure. So, look, a few things. I think there's three problems when it comes to trying to make an immediate impact in your business today. When you think about, how do I deal with this lead flow problem? Because this is something we consistently hear, which is, I just need more leads. Give me more leads and I convert those. You've got three, you've really got to think about three key problems to deal with this lead flow. The first thing is, you've got to work out how to bring more focus. So bring more focus to your target market and the skill set that you have, and being able to be and being able to apply that. And I call this, you need better alignment between your customer, the market opportunity, and the opportunities that are there for you today. Partners need to move away from being generalists. So generalists are commoditized, and commoditized generalists really sit in this area of really being everything to everyone and nothing to everyone at the same time. So you've got to be able to look for some differentiation in how you can go to market. And then the third thing is really you've got to get in market. You've got to stop not being in market and you've got to get in market. And you've got to really focus on having a consistent in market activity as opposed to I need leads this month or I have a revenue gap and I need to fill that. So you've got to actually implement that in your business. So that's kind of an immediate opportunity that I think partners can really take a step back and think about those. How do they address those three problems? Ultimately, if you want to run a differentiated business, if you want to run a well-run business, I'd like you to think about it from a iceberg perspective. So picture an iceberg. Above the water, we're looking at an iceberg. It's all beautiful. And the reality is that the top of the iceberg is actually not what moves it. It's everything that happens below that iceberg that moves it. So if you want to create a growth-focused business, if you want to scale your Microsoft business, when you look at top of the iceberg, business improvement is only going to get you 10% of the way there. You actually need to look what's happening below the line. What is driving your overall business? And there are three things that drive differentiated businesses in the market. One is businesses that are decisive or can be decisive. And this is about being able to take decisive action in your business. The second thing is being having a relevant or predictable control in your business. So the way you execute your business has got to be, you've got to have this premium execution in your business. And the third thing is you need currency. You need to have relevant currency. And relevant currency is relevant with your target market and the audience that you serve, but also relevant currency with what vendors want you to align to take advantage of the opportunity so you can be seen as a segment leader. Businesses that are focused on decisiveness, relevance, and predictability, those are businesses that can create a more differentiated, well-run business, and you remove this dependency on vendors to completely be the life and blood of your business.
Excellent. All right. And how can people reach out to you, keep in touch, and see what you're up to on a regular basis?
They can get hold of me, desmond@partnerelevate.com. That's my email address. Jump on LinkedIn. You would see I'm very active there, so shoot me a message on LinkedIn. And we are starting a case study program with Microsoft Partners next month. So we're looking for partners who want to differentiate themselves in the market. We actually want to create sales offers in market and partners who want to be able to create 30 leads in 90 days and work 10 new deals in that time period as well. It's a case study group we're running. You can shoot me an email if you want more details. But Rob, it's been really great talking to you and really a great opportunity to talk about something that I'm passionate about as well.
Excellent. Well, I will take the opportunity on behalf of the listeners to thank Des for sharing all of that insight with us and providing people that information and some actionable steps as well as anything to continue on. I'm sure Des wouldn't have any issue, as you mentioned, to reach out to him to get any clarification and also some suggestions. This is a very challenging area for a lot of partners, as we've talked about. It is a very, something that they have not a lot of experience with. So reaching out, to someone like Des with his experience in the channel and with Microsoft and what he does now, I think is a good idea and certainly worthwhile. So again, but I will take this opportunity for Des sharing all that information with us today.
Thanks, Rob, and everyone stay safe.
Excellent. All right. Well, that's it for this episode of the Need to Know podcast.
You have been listening to the Need to Know podcast from CIA Ops. For training on using technologies like SharePoint Online or Microsoft 365, visit www.ciaopsacademy.com. By purchasing from the selections available, you'll be directly supporting this podcast. To provide feedback on this episode, visit www.ciaops.com/contact.